This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد بعثنا في كل أمة رسولا أن اعبدوا الله واجتنبوا الطاغوت فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ هَدَى اللَّهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ حَقَّتْ عَلَيْهِ الضَّلَالَةِ فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ المكذبين إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raised in every nation an apostle, saying, Serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them whom Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejecters. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him, quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Israeli forces kill another Palestinian teen during their raid on the occupied West Bank city of Rafidia. Ukraine's intelligence agency admits Kiev was responsible for last year's attack on the bridge connecting the Crimean Peninsula to mainland Russia. And wildfires erupt on the Greek mainland, killing at least two people and forcing thousands to leave their homes. Our top story for this half hour, Israel's deadly violence across the occupied territory shows no sign of abating. Now a Palestinian teen has fallen victim to the regime's incessant bloodshed in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, 14-year-old Fares Sharhabil Abu Samra was wounded by Israeli live fire in the head during a raid in the city of Galilea. He later succumbed to his injuries at hospital. The new fatality came after Israeli forces attacked a western district of the city using live and rubber-coated bullets, stun grenades, and tear gas against civilians. Earlier on Wednesday, Israeli troops fatally shot a Palestinian man in a refugee camp near Nablus. It came a day after three Palestinians were killed by the regime's forces near the same city. Israeli forces regularly launch deadly raids across the West Bank, particularly in the cities of Nablus and Jenin. The regime has killed over 200 Palestinians so far this year, including 37 children and 11 women. Several countries have sent written statements to the International Court of Justice urging the UN court to address Israeli violations in the occupied Palestinian territories. In its statement, Qatar condemned continued occupation of Palestinian territories by Israel. It called on the ICJ to require the regime to end its unlawful occupation of those territories and provide full compensation for the damage it has caused. Oman, for its part, requested the World Court to give an advisory opinion regarding the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. China has also sent a written statement on Israel's violations against Palestinians. This after the UN General Assembly requested the ICJ to give an advisory opinion on the legal consequences arising from the policies and practices of Israel in the occupied territories. The statements come as Israel continues its serious violations of Palestinians' rights in defiance of international law. And the Israeli parliament has ratified new legislation that will curb judicial independence. Palestinians in the occupied territories warned that the law will make it easier for the far-right cabinet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to pursue its anti-Palestinian policies. Our correspondent Mona Kandil reports from Ramallah.
The Israeli Supreme Court's decisions have always been biased and never fairly judged Palestinians in all aspects. Now it will even be prevented to veto cabinet decisions on the ground of being unreasonable. The Israeli parliament has passed a law that limits the powers of the Supreme Court. Experts say this means the Israeli cabinet will pursue policies that serve its far-right agenda. This will allow the cabinet headed by Benjamin Netanyahu to have even more control over decisions that will have negative consequences for Palestinians.
The Israeli Knesset has passed a bill that would overhaul the judiciary and limit its powers. This allows the regime to act without restrictions and to go on with its settlement policy. The regime will also have more freedom to implement its hostile policies against Palestinians who are already suffering from apartheid.
The Israeli regime is seeking to pass more controversial laws without any intervention or objection from the Supreme Court, even if these laws discriminate against Palestinians. This regime will also accelerate the expansion of settlements in the occupied West Bank, regardless of the fact that this means more land confiscation and preventing the Palestinians to establish their future state. The cabinet's plans have sparked months of mass protests. Since the start of the year, weekly protests have been held by Israelis opposed to the reform plans. At the end of the day, experts say that these Israeli laws, policies, and practices are intended to maintain a cruel system of control over Palestinians, and this new law will definitely escalate the system of oppression and domination against Palestinians, not only by the Israeli forces, but the settlers as well. Muna Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Mourning ceremonies are underway across Iran to commemorate Tasua, the day before the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam and a grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. Mourners are holding ceremonies and processions to mark the event. The commemoration services culminate in Ashura, which falls on July 28th this year. That's tomorrow on Ashura. Imam Hussein and 72 of his faithful companions were all martyred in an unequal battle with the army of the tyrant of the time. The third Shia Imam had risen up against the tyrannical rule and refused to capitulate to their demands. Imam Hussein gave his life to protect Islam and Islamic values. Muharram processions are taking place in various cities across Iran. Major, apart from also being mourning ceremonies, there are major spectacles that are recreated annually where we see these large processions known as Daste, where protesters gather in their numbers and performing the rituals and the ceremonies that are accompanied with the Muharram mourning processions. Today, as we mentioned, is Tasua, which means the ninth day of the lunar month of Muharram. It's the penultimate day of the 10-day Muharram processions, which culminates in the day of Ashura, where Imam Hussein and his 72 companions were slain to the last man in the plains of Karbala in modern Iraq. As we mentioned earlier, it was an unequal battle against the tyrant of the time, the third Umayyad Caliph Yazid ibn Muawiyah. The third Shia Imam had risen up against the tyrannical rule of Yazid and refused to capitulate to the demands of this tyrant ruler. Imam Hussein gave his life to protect Islam and Islamic values, and those lessons and those messages resonate today with the followers of the Imam, and regardless of what sect, religion, and creed you are from, there are many lessons to be learned from the Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's last stand against the tyrant of his time. Of course, as we mentioned, the peak of the mourning processions will be tomorrow, high noon, where it is believed where Imam Hussein was martyred on the plains of Karbala in modern-day Iraq. Well, to the war in Ukraine, where Kiev's forces have reportedly launched major offenses in the southern and eastern front lines, a Russian official has spoken of several waves of attacks staged in the Zaporizhia region with Ukrainian forces using Western military equipment. including Leopard tanks. Kiev has not commented on that offensive. On another front, the Ukrainian military reported making small advances against Russian forces in parts of Bakhmut in the east. The advances are made a day after the United States announced another military aid package for Ukraine worth $400 million, including Black Hornet nano drones. Russia has time and again warned the West against providing military assistance to Ukraine, arguing the move would only prolong the war. Ukraine's intelligence agency has for the first time acknowledged a sabotage operation that badly damaged a bridge connecting Russia to Crimea in October last year. Speaking on national television, the head of the Security Service of Ukraine said his agency was behind the attack. Vasil Maliuk was referring to the explosion that was caused by a truck bomb and left three people dead. Ukraine had not officially claimed responsibility, but Russia then blamed it on Kiev, calling it a terrorist act. Earlier this month, the bridge came under another attack by two maritime drones, which Russia said was launched by Ukrainian forces. Kiev has yet to confirm the recent attack, but Ukrainian officials had earlier portrayed the bridge as a legitimate target. The bridge is a vital supply route for Russian forces in the war with Ukraine. Well, the North Korean leader has held talks with the visiting defense minister of Russia in Pyongyang. Kim Jong-un and Sergei Shoigu have pledged to boost military and defense relations between the two countries. Shoigu handed the North Korean leader a letter from Russian President Vladimir Putin. Kim, for his part, thanked Putin for sending a military delegation led by Shoigu to attend the country's Victory Day anniversary. He added that the meeting deepens strategic and traditional ties between Pyongyang and Moscow. Kim also met a high-ranking Chinese delegation. The Chinese and Russian delegations are in Pyongyang to take part in celebrations marking the 70th anniversary of an armistice that ended the Korean War. Earlier, we've discussed the significance of the Russian defense minister's visit to North Korea with our guests in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Rhett McGovern, former CIA analyst, joins us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Daniel Kovalik, author and activist, joins us from Pittsburgh, PA. Welcome to you both. Rhett McGovern, so welcome. What do you think about this visit of Russia and China, in which they all both have the a rather large delegation, from what we understand, visiting North Korea, in the context of the U.S. and, of course, how it feels regarding China and North Korea at the same time? Can you put all that into context for us, if you can?
Well, I would cite Vladimir Putin, President Putin of Russia, back last fall when he said U.S. policymakers are crazy to take on both China and Russia at the same time. He attributed it to arrogance and a feeling of self-impunity. Well, North Korea? A Russian defense minister visiting North Korea? What has North Korea got? Well, it's got ICBMs now, folks, missiles that can reach the United States. So the way I see this visit, in addition to celebrating, if an armistice can be celebrated after millions of people killed without real necessity, I would say that he's trying to round up all the usual people who will support Russia, and he's already got the defense minister, his opposite number, committed to supporting Russia in terms of what's going on in Ukraine. The balloon is going up in Ukraine. Biden has got to decide whether he's what he's going to do. He thinks he can escalate Russia when Biden was vice president, Obama admitted that it is Russia that has escalatory dominance there. So it really depends on what Biden can do. Putin is not sure what that might be. He has to play for the worst. And so he sends Shoigu on this mission to hobnob not only with the Chinese, but with the North Koreans as a warning. Look, two-front war, not really a good idea, U.S.
All right, so what do you think about that? Is that what we're looking at, Daniel Kovalik, in terms of the message that it sends with Shoigu going there? And, of course, China alongside in a warning to I guess, the U.S., based on what we're seeing in terms of what it's doing in Ukraine?
Yeah, I think they're definitely circling the wagons, and they have to. I mean, the U.S. has just sent, if I'm correct, I think the second nuclear submarine to the area to threaten China and to threaten North Korea. Meanwhile, of course, as Ray McGovern just noted, you know, the U.S. is now considering, you know, whether it's going to escalate with Russia and, you know, start, frankly, a world war with two major powers, which is, you know, obviously complete insanity. But it seems like the Biden White House is certainly considering this possibility. So I think that China and Russia and North Korea are showing that they're united in defending themselves against this threat.
Thank you for that. Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst there. Also, Daniel Kovalik, thank you, author and activist. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
Wildfires rage on in central Greece's strong winds and temperatures exceeding 40 degrees Celsius intensify the blazes, forcing thousands to flee their homes. The Greek Fire Brigade says more than 60 wildfires have erupted across the Greek mainland during the past 24 hours. At least two people have been so far killed, with officials ordering the evacuation of several communities north of the capital, Athens. Firefighters are battling the flames as they threaten an industrial zone in the city of Volos. The Labor Ministry has urged employers in the area to suspend their businesses. Large areas of the Mediterranean have been under an intense summer heat wave in recent days. Firefighters have been battling to put out blazes across the region from Portugal to Algeria. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Imam Bagher, peace be upon him, said, "Pilgrimage of the tomb of the Messenger of God and the martyrs, and pilgrimage of Imam Hussein's tomb, equals to an accepted Hajj that has been performed in the company of the Messenger of God."
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision, and that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security, and placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household, and make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
France is sliding into recession. That's according to experts and analysts who predicted the worst economic forecast for France. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, the French economy is ending the second quarter with an unexpected heavy decline in services and manufacturing, signaling a likely contraction that a compiled by S&P Global showed recently. Based on Purchasing Manager Index, PMI, flash data from the Hamburg Commercial Bank, HCOB, the report suggested a 0.5% contraction from the previous quarter, as output levels in France fell for the first time since the start of 2023. A worsening decline in manufacturing production was accompanied by a renewed reduction in activity across the services sector, data revealed. The overall level of output in France declined at the strongest pace since February 2021. The flash composite PMI output index for France fell for the first time since January, dropping from 51.2 in May to 47.3 in June, below the critical 50 threshold that separates growth from contraction and hitting a 28-month low. Norman Liebeck, an economist at HCOB, said, prior to June reading, our nowcast model had signaled economic growth of 0% for the second quarter, with manufacturing contracting and services expanding. However, figures for June fell short of expectations, as now not only the manufacturing sector, but also the services economy is expected to contract, and economic growth turns negative overall along with it, he added. Leibake stated that although the latest figures do not yet represent a recession, a speculation that one will occur is likely to increase. Deterioration in demand, in particular from abroad, was driving June's slump in business activity further and faster, Red Report said. The survey data signaled a continued downturn in factory production, extending the manufacturing output slump that started in the middle of 2022. Economists said driving the French economy into contraction territory was the services sector, where activity levels declined for the first time since January. According to survey respondents, inflation, challenging financial conditions such as difficulties securing loans and business shutdowns were the main factors behind the slump in French business activity. Meanwhile, Guardian reported the Eurozone slipped into recession in the first 3 months of the year, after official figures were revised to show the bloc's economy shrank as the rising cost of living weighed on consumer spending. Figures from Eurostat, the EU's statistical agency, showed gross domestic product GDP fell by 0.1% in the first quarter of 2023 and the final 3 months of 2022 after revisions to earlier estimates. A technical recession is generally defined as two consecutive quarters of negative growth. Previous estimates suggested a single currency bloc had narrowly avoided recession with zero growth in both quarters. The updated figures showed the wider EU swerved a recession after GDP rose by 0.1% in the first 3 months of the year, after a contraction of 0.2% in the final quarter of 2022. Households across the Eurozone have come under pressure from rising living costs after Russia-Ukraine crisis triggered a sharp increase in gas prices, fueling the highest rates of inflation since the foundation of the single currency bloc. With consumers under pressure from the higher energy and food prices, household final consumption dragged down GDP across the euro area by 0.1 percentage points after a larger 1 percentage point drop in the previous quarter. Several eurozone economies were in recession or came close to recording two consecutive quarters of decline, including Germany, the EU's largest economy. France recorded close to zero growth, with flatlining growth in the fourth quarter and a modest increase of 0.2% in the first quarter of 2023. Business activity growth in the euro area slowed in June amid lingering fears of the impact of higher interest rates and concerns over demand growth. Data compiled by S&P Global showed. According to the calculations, the Eurozone's Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, plunged to 50.3 in June from 52.8 in the previous month. A PMI reading over 50 indicates growth or expansion of business activity, while a reading below this threshold suggests contraction. The indicator is now at its lowest in 5 months. Eurozone business output growth came close to stalling in June, pointing to renewed weakness in the economy after brief growth revival recorded in the spring, S&P Global said in a press release. Although energy and supply chain worries have eased since late last year, June has seen a further escalation of concerns over demand growth and in particular the impact of higher interest rates and the resulting possibilities of recessions, both in domestic markets and further afield. The decline was led by France, which has been suffering from worker strikes, and Germany, which recently saw its factory orders slump. Analysts noted that manufacturing was the principal area of weakness for the overall business activity in June, along with service sector expansion, which has slowed sharply.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Carpets woven with love. Part 6.
Here is Milan's Paul di Pezzoli Museum. The hunting carpet, which is kept here, depicts pictures of hunters in pursuit of animals. In the inner field of the carpet, there are animals, birds, and horsemen with spears and swords who are looking for prey. The birds are either flying or they've carefully ducked from behind a flower bush. This carpet is made of silk thread, cotton weft, and wool pile, and this text can be seen in the inscription of the center of the carpet. It was possible to finish this precious work due to Ghayath ud-Din Ejami's efforts. This carpet is one of the few carpets with a date and an inscription from the Safavid era, which has been delicately woven and shows off in this museum with a miniature painting. But how can this carpet find its way in Italy? There are theories about the historical background of the carpet. Some say that the carpet was originally in the Quirinal Palace, which served as the residence of popes. But after their overthrow, the Italian royal family possessed it. Victor Emmanuel III, the King of Italy in 1919, handed over the carpet to the Italian government. Another theory is the hunting carpet was in the possession of the royal family of England, and Victor Emmanuel III, the King of Italy at the time, borrowed it to display in a royal exhibition. But the exhibition was never held, and the hunting carpet remained in Italy. Anyway, whatever the story is, this masterpiece of Shah Ismail's period has found its way to the Italian Museum to familiarize the visitors with the hunting style around the Safavid era. Of course, the carpet with the hunting ground style left from the Safavid era does not end up with just this one. To see another example of hunting carpet, you have to travel to Austria. This is the Vienna Museum in Austria, and this hunting carpet dates back to the middle of the 10th century. The hunting rug is woven with silk and gold, and it was designed by Sultan Muhammad, the famous painter of Shah Mahmud's court. The weft and the warp of this sample is silk, and the pile is silk with gold and silver thread on white silk. In the inner field of the carpet, there are images of animals such as lion, zebra, leopards, dragon, phoenix, rabbit, deer, wolf, bear, and jackal. Hunters on horseback are chasing them. They carry bow and arrow, spears, swords, or sticks as weapons. Some experts believe this carpet is the most exquisite carpet ever woven. The harmony of the colors and the balance of the carpet have doubled its beauty. But the highest level of progress in carpet weaving was achieved during the era of Shah Tahmasp, the son of Shah Ismail. Shah Tahmasp himself had a hand in designing, and it is said he made several designs for carpets. He was the founder of urban style. That is, he brought the art of carpet weaving to the city, which was generally a rural or nomadic profession. At the time, carpet weaving became popular not only in Tabriz, but also in Qazvin, Kashan, Hamidad, Shushtar, and Herat. Here is the historical shrine of Sheikh Safi al-Din Ardabili in Erbil. Sheikh Safi al-Din is the great ancestor of the Safavid dynasty. Among the carpets of Shah Tahmasp era, we should mention Sheikh Safi al-Din or Ardabil carpet. This carpet is one of the most exquisite carpets of the Safavid era, which was woven by the order of Shah Tahmasp for his father's tomb, Shah Ismail I, who was buried in the shrine of Sheikh Safi al-Din. This carpet was woven in 1946 and is actually a pair. One of them is kept here. The Victoria and Albert Museum in London, the largest museum in the world in terms of decorative arts. The other carpet is kept in the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, the largest art museum in the west of the United States. The Ardabil carpet has a date and signature and the name of its weaver. Maqsood Kashani is woven on it, therefore it is considered a historical document. At one end of the carpet, a poem is written that reads, "Except for thy threshold, there is no refugees for me in all the world. Except for this door, there is no resting place for my head." Some carpet experts believe that these lines were included in the carpet upon the order of Shah Tahmasp to show his devotion to his ancestor, Sheikh Safi al-Din. Ardabil or Sheikh Safi carpet has a symmetrical center, and the precision used in weaving it has made it one of the most unique works of art in the middle of this carpet. There is a beautiful medallion which is surrounded by 16 ovals. The medallion is a pattern that is placed in the center of the carpet, and the ovals are the ornaments of the medallion which are woven around it. The medallion design with its ovals is repeated in the four corners of the carpet. The inner field of the carpet is dark blue and is decorated with elegant and delicate flowers full of pomegranate flower branches. There is a large border inside, which is surrounded by three narrow stripes and a series of cartouches and inscriptions. This carpet is unique in terms of design and texture and is included in the list of 50 masterpieces of the world. There are many samples of the Safavid era carpets in the museums of the world, and it is not possible to mention all of them. But maybe the most outstanding ones would be worth mentioning. After the Ardabil carpet, the hunting miniature carpet and the hunting Zarbaft carpet, which are the most beautiful carpets left from the Safavid era, some of the other carpets and rugs are all at the next level of fame and importance. The name of this carpet is Sangusko, which is kept in Miho Museum in Japan. A similar carpet is kept in the Carpet Museum of Iran. During the Safavid era, about 12 to 14 of these carpets were woven in Iran, and the most beautiful one was given to a Polish prince named Roman Sangusko. Therefore, other carpets of this collection were also known by this name. borders with panel designs, all kinds of animal motifs and faces, peacocks in pairs, phoenix, dragon, and fish and animals combat designs, are among the common patterns of these carpets. The fight and struggle of various animals, and sometimes the conflict between humans and animals, are referred to as animals' combat designs. The pattern of the carpet is medallion design, that is, it has a medallion in the center and a corner in each edge. The corner is placed in the four edges of the carpet and is usually curved. All kinds of animals can be seen in the center ends of the carpet. In addition to the carpet design, the art of miniature works is also used in this carpet. The warp materials of this carpet is made of yarn. The weft is made of wool, and the pile is made of wool and is dyed with natural colors. Another outstanding rug is the Anhalt carpet. The carpet was discovered in the second half of the 19th century in Dessau Castle, a seat of the Dukes of Anhalt. Technically, this carpet has cotton thread, silk weft, and wool pile. This rug with a large central medallion, a blue inscription, and red-headed medallions with colorful designs, six peacocks in the upper half of the carpet, and six peacocks in the lower half, displays the art of the Safavid era. The central medallion design of this carpet is very similar to the cover of the book in the Safavid period, as well as the tiling works of the Timurid and Safavid eras. The dark blue polygonal head medallion of the carpet has been observed many times in the tiling works of the Safavid era, and it shows the close relationship between carpet design, tiling, and book design in the Safavid era. The Anhalt carpet was donated to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York in 1946 by Samuel H. Kress Foundation. It is possible that Joseph Dobbin was previously keeping the carpet in London and he sold it to Samuel Henry Kress. Since this carpet was previously owned by Duke Anhalt of Dessau, it became known as Anhalt. The unique colors of the carpet, such as its yellow background, which is rarely seen in carpets of this type, makes it a special piece. Now from this particular piece, we go to a carpet with a special history. This carpet is the Krakow Paris carpet, which is divided into two halves, and one half is in the Museum of Decorative Art in Paris, and the other half is in the Krakow Cathedral in Poland. But why is this carpet cut in half and each half is in two different countries? The story is that during the Ottoman-Persian Wars, this carpet fell into the hands of the Ottomans, and because the Ottomans controlled a part of Europe at the time, it was sent there. In the Battle of Parkani in 1683, between the Polish and Ottoman forces, the King of Poland, John III Sobieski, seized the carpet and took it to Krakow, the capital of Poland at the time, and donated it to the Church of Krakow. The church decided to spread the carpet on the steps of the altar. But because dimensions of the carpet were bigger, they cut it into halves. As a result, one half of it was spread and the other half was sent to the church's storeroom. Later, the half in the storeroom was sold to an antique shop. A French person named Jules Massillon bought it from the antique shop and in 1903 donated the carpet to the Museum of Decorative Arts in Paris. Therefore, the carpet is called Paris Krakow. But that's not the whole story. The half which existed in the Krakow Church in Poland was seized by the Germans during World War II. After the end of the war, it was returned to Poland and kept in the eastern part of the Wawel Museum in Krakow. The carpet, no matter how, survived challenges throughout history to display one of the great successes of the history of decorative arts, according to the famous carpet expert, Professor Arthur Upham Pope. The warp and the weft of the carpet is made of wool and silk with a design of an imaginary garden and a flowing waterfall, flowers, blossoms, and cypress trees with colorful birds and animals like lion, leopard, deer, stag, and monkey can be seen in the carpet. A phoenix is flying through the branches, and all these motifs can be seen on the golden color of the inner field with a special shine. In the middle of the rug, there's an oval-shaped medallion with a purple color with two harmonic head medallions along a vertical line of the inner field. Of the three borders, one is wider with a pattern of flowers, deer, and other birds. The other two borders are narrower and are designed with a flower pattern on a yellow background, as well as a flower and bird pattern on a dark blue background. Another outstanding carpet of the Safavid era, which is one of the most expensive carpets, is the coronation carpet, an Iranian carpet which belongs to the Danish royal family. This carpet is kept in Rosenborg Castle in Copenhagen. As the name of the carpet suggests, this carpet is used during the coronation of Danish kings. The coronation carpet is woven with silver and gold silk threads and is displayed only once a year in autumn. This is the Chelsea carpet in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Another masterpiece of the Safavid era. The warp and weft of this hand-woven carpet is made of silk, and its tile is made of first-class and high-quality wool. In the design of this carpet, two medallions with a dark background are used. Also, there are two Chinese-style vases between the medallions, which are repeated at the end of each main field, and a fish pond can be seen in the center. The rest of the inner fields include relatively small motifs such as flower or fruit tree or a pair of animals that are fighting. It is said that the Chelsea carpet belonged to the royal palace in Isfahan and after its fall was taken out from Isfahan. Later, they bought it from a seller in Chelsea for the museum. This is why it's named the Chelsea carpet. One of the most controversial carpets of the Safavid era are the carpets known as the salting. These carpets were among the carpets whose date and origin were debated by the world's famous carpet experts. A man named George Salting, a collector in early 1900, donated a Gulabatun carpet with a pattern of plants and animals and a border with Persian poems to the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. This carpet was published in the museum catalogue with the identification of Iran in the 16th century. In 1931, a new catalogue was published with this content. A lot of evidence indicates that these carpets were woven in the suburbs of Istanbul and at the latest in the 18th century. With this new catalogue, not only the Iranian origin of these carpets and similar samples were called into question, but also at least 200 years were reduced from the age of the carpets. It was later discovered the author of this content was Edward Cecil Tattersall, then the director of the museum's textile department. Of course, this claim was not taken seriously for a long time, until the famous Iranologist and prominent art critic Professor Frederick Zehr, in an article in 1939, implicitly confirmed Tattersall's theory. When the famous carpet expert Kurt Erdmann confirmed this theory, the arguments about the origin and the age of the carpet became intense. Finally, several European, American, and even Turkish carpet experts conducted comprehensive and impartial historical scientific researches, and in 6 documented reports to the International Conference on Oriental Carpets that was held in San Francisco in 1996, they proved that the carpet is Iranian and belongs to the Safavid era. The unprecedented consensus of the experts at the International Conference on Oriental Carpets in 1996 and the publication of their strong and refutable articles in 1999 put an end to decades of controversy and sorted out the salting carpets issue forever. Apart from the controversial salting carpets, we reach the Sea Wave carpet. This exquisite Iranian carpet is known by this name because of its special and wavy pattern. The other name of this carpet is Portuguese, because at the time of its weaving, which was during the Safavid era of Shah Abbas, Goa was one of the Portuguese colonies of India, and the mentioned carpet was transferred there. One of the features of this carpet is a large medallion and the image of a ship in the corner. This carpet was woven with cotton yarn and wool and is now kept in the Museum of Applied Arts in Vienna. The vase design is one of the most famous designs of the Safavid era. The features of this design is the presence of one or two vases in the center of the carpet and filling the carpet's inner field with large palmette flowers, one of the most famous vase designs of the Safavid era. In contrast to vase carpets, which are simpler, there are Polish carpets, which are glamorous and extravagant. Polish carpets, or Polonaise, are referred to a large group of zarbaf carpets of the Safavid era. It is said that one of the reasons for calling these carpets Polish is that one of these carpets was exhibited at the Paris International Exhibition in 1878, which belonged to a Polish prince named August Alexander Czartoryski. But in fact, there is another reason for that, and to know it, you have to dig a little deeper into history. In the spring of 1601, Polish King Sigismund III gave an Armenian merchant named Muratovich a mission to travel to Iran and procure some carpets for the Polish royal palaces. The Armenian merchant ordered the carpets to the weavers of Kashan, who at the time had experience and fame in weaving silk carpets. This is where these carpets became known as Polish carpets. Little by little, the popularity of these carpets increased amongst European princes and nobles until about 300 pieces of these carpets were produced and sent to European markets. Until now, more than 100 carpets, rugs, and silk kilims have been identified from this group. The 8 carpets which the Armenian merchant ordered are now kept in the Munich Residence Museum. There are 6 rugs and 1 carpet from this group, and it's in the Carpet Museum of Iran. Perhaps one of the reasons why carpet weaving reached its peak in the Safavid era is the fact that the first three Safavid kings gave great importance to carpet. Since their rule was consecutive, the art of carpet weaving could be noticed and grow in a long period of time. After Shah Tahmasp, his son Shah Abbas came to the throne. Shah Abbas moved his capital to Isfahan and established the largest royal carpet workshop there. Two French tourists named Tavernier and Chardin, the British Sir Robert Shirley, and the secretary of Shah Abbas have mentioned this workshop in their writings. The notes indicate that this workshop was built near Shehel Sotun and Naqshi Jahan Square. Like his father, Shah Abbas gave special importance to carpet weaving, and even left a school under the name of Shah Abbas School in carpet weaving. 4,000 pieces of carpets and torn and knotted rugs, kilims and Zulu rugs are left from the Safavid era, which less than 4% of these carpets are left in Iran, and the rest are scattered in museums, private collections, and some palaces and holy sites abroad. Safavid kings allowed carpet weavers to weave styles and patterns according to their own taste. With this work, both the originality of the carpet was preserved and creativity in creating patterns reached its peak, so that different designs and patterns of carpets emerged in the Safavid era. Therefore, the story of the carpet in the Safavid era was a long one. However, the last Safavid kings had no interest in carpets, and there is no masterpiece that was definitely made in the last half century of the Safavid era. Kashan, Joshgan, and Kerman were among the cities that became famous during the Safavid era, along with Isfahan in carpet weaving and design. Undoubtedly, the invitation of first-rate masters, such as Reza Abbasi and his accompanying collection, had a great impact on the growth and expansion of Safavid era's carpet weaving. The dyeing of wool and silk with natural colors has made the carpets of the Safavid era last and shine, which are still impressive after centuries. From the Ottoman kings to the courts of European countries, there are traces of Iranian carpets. And this background is the valuable asset of the art of Iranian carpet industry. After the attack of the Afghans and the fall of the Safavid dynasty and the famine, the few remaining royal workshops in Isfahan were also closed. Even if the masters of these workshops survived, they were without support and displaced. This situation continued in all carpet weaving workshops in Iran, and the carpet entered its stagnation period again, and the world markets gradually moved towards other countries. The era of the Safavid kings teaches us that whenever we pay attention to carpets and other hand-woven works, our carpets become unique and have 100% value. Attention to the modern design and at the same time the use of natural materials and precision in the texture and honesty in the work are among the subjects of the Safavid era in the design of the carpet, and unfortunately the burning candle of the Iranian hand-woven carpet is extinguished with the end of the Safavid era. The history of carpet weaving teaches us that we should remove the obstacles and once again display the pure aspects of Iranian carpet weaving art in the international arena.
in the limelight.
Abnormal levels of certain proteins, many of which have roles outside the brain, could be an early hallmark of Alzheimer's disease or similar conditions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Nature noted in this regard, a study that followed thousands of people over 25 years has identified proteins linked to the development of dementia if their levels are unbalanced during middle age. The findings, published in Science Translational